Welcome back. This WhatsApper says, hi, Joanne, hope you're well. I'm usually wearing another hat when join the conversations on this program. Today, I come as a black citizen of this country and citizen of the world. Regard the plight of black race. Please, if you're typing, forgive me, but I have to go over the typos and read through this. Your opinion regarding financial reparations not being so important appears naive when we exist in a capitalist world that demands finances to get ahead for the opportunity to which you refer in order to gain leverage to even start a small business, give children decent college education, etc. Development, economics, health, education, social services, infrastructure, and all need financing. Colonial countries that drained us and left us void owe in reparations to repay for damage and disadvantage of repression, destruction of Black Wall Street, and all other structures destroyed out of the institutional racism. Now, I did not say that the reparations were not as important. All I'm asking is, where was the money coming from? Who's going to receive it? Those types of questions, that's all I ask. Who's paying the money? We've had this discussion for reparations for years and nothing has happened. So I'm not trivializing it. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm saying, where is it coming from? And even if we answer those questions, attitudes have to change in order for progress to happen in as far as black people are concerned and to get better and equal opportunity moving forward. So I believe it's just a combination of things, but the money aspect of it was just asking, where will it come from? Who will get this money and so on and so forth? And if we do, and the attitudes remain the same, we're treated the same, then, you know, it's not one size fits all. Let's give us $1 billion, an apology, and then that's it. We still have to have a plan, and we still have to change the way we do things, and the way we think is how to start, in my humble opinion. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air.
Yes, Ms. Agas, we were saying about Anthony Wood, Mr. Anthony Wood. Yes, I was saying to you that, you know, he may have an issue with a member or two, and it's his own prerogative to still speak good of the party. Look, for example, you remember a few years ago with the gentleman from down St. Lucie, Mr. Dennis Kelman. You remember there was an issue with him and David Thompson, and I am sure Kelman speaks highly of the Democratic Labour Party. He had an issue with David, but he had an issue with all the members. You know, so the gentleman issue to me is not valid. Now, Miss Joanne, mm-hmm. Are you hearing all of this black Lives Matter issue here this morning with you, this caller calling and speaking about black lives and so on? Joanne, we blacks, we keep down ourselves. We keep down ourselves. Typical example. You put a hand of keys in a black man today. He treats his workers like if they're dogs, cats, because he controls a hand of keys in his hand. Some of these black, I am afraid to say, some of these black employers treat their own black workers in the most shabbiest manner you can think about. You know? So when they're talking about all this black thing and looking at all this George Floyd thing, yes, it's good to look at George Floyd issue and so on. But bottom line, we still at zero because we still at the bottom line treating one another like we are worthless. They are worth nothing just because you get a promotion or you got a handful of keys in your hand. You know, you're on top of the world. And that that type of attitude, I am not ashamed to say it is big among blacks. As long as he got a hand of keys in his hand, jingling, he's Mr. This.
And why do you think we think like that as black people whenever something great happens for us? Getting the keys, according to you. Why do you think that happens?
Well, what I might say, I might go across two races, so I got to leave out. I didn't want to say that on the air. Mm-hmm. I will leave out that.
Right. Okay. Okay. All right. Want to thank you so much. Don't Brass Stacks, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joya. Or good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
We'll try to change Barbados rod by rod. There's some points I want to make pertaining to the QEH.
Mm-hmm.
Some are positive, some are negative. I can start with the positive verse. And I'm speaking from a personal experience. From November last year to probably April this year, I've been to the patient of the QEH through A&E, the area where you go and sit and wait before you get assigned to a ward, and the dressing department. And let me tell you something. The service and professionalism that I receive is second to none. And the first time I have met a male nurse at the Columbus Hospital, and I don't know where the orderlies at the hospital get the training, but I am telling you, the service from the orderlies totally blew me away. And I must compliment the nurses in the dressing department, and especially the orderly in that department. They work like a team. They make you comfortable. And the professionalism, the courtesy, the empathy, everything. I was proud of my Barbadian workers at the QEH. Kudos to them.
And this is you going through the accident and emergency through
the
system?
Yes, from the accident right to the system.
Okay, that's very good. Well, kudos to the hospital. When we hear compliments, then we really should shout, you know, to the mountain tops and let everybody know that when good is done, you know, you need to acknowledge it. So I want to thank you for that on behalf of them.
Now, when we talk about poor people, sometimes we are victimized because we are poor due to the situation. I'm going to give you two cases at the QEH.
Mm-hmm.
A single parent went in to the QEH, was diagnosed with a tumor in their head. They had MIR, they had CAT scan, all sorts of scans they had. The anesthetic person met with them, and they were told the operation days is Mondays and Wednesdays. The operations keep get putting back. Eventually, they can no longer see, no longer smell, no longer taste. And was sent home as a single parent. No compensation, no empathy, no social work put in place for that individual. That individual had to live on their own. Fortunately, they have succeeded. Then there was another case where a blind gentleman went into the hospital, was diagnosed with a tumor. Operation keep getting put him back. The tumor burst, and that individual passed away. I am saying, one is too much. Two is too much. I think we need to take better care of our people when they go in there.
Let me ask you a question. You said you went in there, and I commended you for sharing your great experience. That's one. What do you think happened? I don't know if this is hearsay. This is somebody giving you a story.
No. I personally know all two persons.
Okay, so let's start there. What do you think happened with these individuals? Why did you get this great health care and great service and they didn't? May I ask you, first of all, if these individuals were over the age of 65?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
The one that survived is over the age of 65.
All right.
But when they went in, they were not 65.
When they died, when both died, it was over the age of 65?
No, the one that died.
The other one, sorry. What is the age of the other one?
At this present time, that person is in their 60s. Okay. And still living.
All right. So but carry on. Go on.
This is the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Send home some person in that condition, and you didn't even look to see where is the doctor, whether the social worker at the hospital set up infrastructure for that individual to cope with this new way of life. They were left to fend on their own. Okay? Mm-hmm.
But why don't we rewind it a little bit to see what steps should have been taken to avoid what actually happened that left the individual, one, you know, dead and
well,
the other one...
We will never know if the operation would have stopped it or not because mm-hmm. they didn't have the operation until it exploded in there.
And in your opinion, it was too late?
Yes, in my opinion.
Right. So when you said you're close to these individuals, they have family and, you know, that walked them through the process? Because one thing I have learned, and this is based on experience, huh? Sometimes we need people who are vocal in the family. I don't know if you want to call them a medical proxy or somebody. When that patient is lying there, somebody that could go to the nurses, not 10 people from the family, but that one person who can follow through for the patient, speak to the doctors and get answers. So you
fortunately,
need to...
some people have them. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, some people don't.
Do you know if that was the case with the people that you had, that you were talking about?
In some aspects, yes. Mm. In some aspects, okay? Mm-hmm. My next point now about the QH again. Mm-hmm. The eye department at the QH have a backlog of patients. Some are blind, some are visually impaired, some are losing the sight, and some can't see too well. And let me explain myself there. You have persons who have cataract, and all they need is an operation. Okay? That operation is being put back all the time. Sometimes people turn up, they can't find the records. Sometimes they didn't see the doctor for a whole year and they need medication. They need a prescription. Okay? Now, if these persons are not attended within a certain time, because if you have a retina detachment, you have a window of 3 days. Anything after 3 days, you're blind. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, let me say about 10 people had a detachment and did not get the service of the hospital in 3 days. Those 10 people now got to file. Let me say these 10 people are working. They got to go and file national insurance for disability benefits. And instead of contributing, they have to receive. Right. What I'm saying, it is a plea I am making. And I don't care if the person's white, black, green, or blue. We have ophthalmologists in Barbados that if they would donate 5 hours of their time every other week to the eye department of the Queen Mary's Hospital, those backlogs would be cleared up in less than a year. And I throw the challenge out there. We're talking about Black Lives Matters. I am calling on the ophthalmologists out there to donate 5 hours of their time to the eye department every other week and help reduce the backlog.
You're talking about the ones that are not attached to the QEH already, because there are some Because there are some who have their private and attached to the QEH as well.
I am talking about all ophthalmologists in Barbados. Mm-hmm. We talk about free education. They enjoy the luxury of free education. Come back and give back to the community. Mm-hmm. Give back to the less vulnerable. Give back to the disabled.
But here's what I, because there's a deeper issue here, in my opinion, and I'm sure your story about these individuals is not the only story. I'm sure Barbadians have good stories about the QEH, and then they have the other stories that you shared. It is so important that a patient has a family member that will speak for them, that would make phone calls and leave no stone unturned. That's your loved one. I know God has the final say. Yes, he does. But we have to make sure that our loved ones and the doctors do everything that they can, humanly possible, to save a life until the good Lord says different. So that when something happens, because death obviously will happen at some point, at least you can say, I know that I did everything I could do as a family member. And I know that the doctors did everything they could do, but this was the end result. At least you would have some sort of peace of mind. But when things happen and you say, this was too late, this didn't happen, this person didn't do this, and then the person dies as an end result, believe you me, that pain of them dying is bad, but then to know that they died in the way they did because enough wasn't done or some communication wasn't shared.
Every family member is not that strong, is not that advocate. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people
to be a family member. What I'm throwing out, you see how you throw it to the public about the ophthalmologist? What I'm saying to the public, whether that's a family member or friend, everybody got some sort of friend then maybe that you know that a little bit vocal and stuff like that. And even if you're not, just get information and make some phone calls. Some people feel that if they call the QEH, if they ask too many questions, if they get a little too emotional, that a doctor or a nurse or somebody will take it out on the patient. But as I said, and I said this before, and I'll say it again, if you don't advocate for people and show them that you got somebody in QEH that got family, sometimes people may feel, oh, that's just John. He don't keep no noise and nobody don't really visit him, so we could do what we want. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I'm saying you can give them the way how a patient is treated, the way how the family is supporting, the way how people call and present themselves to a doctor. Trust me, doctors and nurses are human beings first before they're anything else.
But Joyanne, sometimes I call on behalf of people, and the first is that, are you a relative? Are you? And if I say no, I'm not, sorry, we cannot discuss that. And I try to explain the situation. Mm-hmm. They don't entertain the discussion.
All right, but let's start with one thing that maybe the population should look at. We, right now, those of us who are not sick, sit down and think of, Lord, the day I go to QEH, because at some point you're going to go, even if it's just at the morgue, and that's the final, but let's just say you get sick. Father, Lord, who is going to not just visit me, because you got a lot of visitors, who in my family would be able to speak on my behalf if I can't, if I'm not able to? I think these are things that we should be asking ourselves right now. And if I don't have a family member like that, which one of my friends? And what you do, because when you put down something called next of kin, then it doesn't necessarily have to be a family member. Sometimes the next of kin could be your best friend, someone who can make decisions or help explain things to you and to the family. And I think we all right now have to look at who is that person.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. And my final point is on national insurance again. I have not seen a government, not one single government, when I talk about national insurance and the poor and the underprivileged in this country. You have employers that people work with for 10 years and never pay a cent into national insurance. Now, as far as I see it, they're collecting on the behalf of NIS. If you put them in the form of a bailiff and the bailiff keep the money, the company going to put the bailiff in court for their money. My problem is why it is that employers are allowed to shut down businesses and owe NIS, reopen business and owe NIS, and the only body suffering is the worker. Because if I just work for $500 a week and national insurance is being taken out, and I have to, and I go on sick leave, there's no guarantee that I am, my employer is not paying in my NIS, there's no guarantee that I will get sick benefits because NIS can say, we don't see any contributions for you. You know, as the old people say, well, the cow grazing, the calf starving. I would like to see the NIS have the power, the legal arm, to recover this money from employers. I would like the NIS to come out and let the public know how much money is owed to them from employers as it relates to NIS deductions and loans that they get from the NIS.
All right, sir, that music tells us that we do have to take a break for the latest. And let me just say that the people of Ealing Park, Christchurch, they're saying that the water truck just passed and they thought it was the ice cream truck, but they didn't stop. So that's basically what they said. They thought it was the ice cream truck. They're playing the jingle, but they're zooming past. So you could not have mistaken that for the ice cream truck because the ice cream truck would have stopped. But anyway, Water Authority, Ealing Park, Christchurch, they need you. They need some water. They need some help. So I was just listening to the 12:30 latest and to hear the young gentleman apologizing. And I thought, now that to me goes a longer way than the fine. Where they go to court, they get a slap on the wrist. They pay the fine, And then that's it. So I actually want to publicly commend the NCC, Ryan Alves, SSA, Alf Padmore, and the police for making that decision for the young men to go and clean up the beach and to apologize. And let me add, the English language, I mean, they were so well spoken with the apology. You would not believe that one of them was the same man that used this colorful language straight out of a Crayola box a couple of days ago. It's a different person. So someone called me and we were discussing it during the break, and he referred to it as constructive embarrassment. Because we have different ways and means of embarrassing people, and sometimes it's just destructive and wicked. Sometimes we put things on social media that are unnecessary. But I must say kudos to the young lady who put that video out. And I don't think she did it in a way to hurt anybody, but to shed light on what people are doing. But look at what has happened as a result. That young man, or those young men, probably will become advocates now for illegal dumping. Because I'm pretty much sure after going through what they're going through right now and cleaning it up, I'm pretty much sure photos of them cleaning will be on the front page of some newspaper, because the media went out there this morning. They have apologized to the public. So they have been they've experienced what we call constructive embarrassment, which is not a bad thing. So I'm sure that the next time they see someone dumping, and particularly the one who loved to use the colorful language, but we know now that school paid off because he can speak well. In other words, he's not that guy only. And the mere fact that he came and he apologized says a lot, both of them. And I think that we should see more of this in terms of a form of punishment. ZR van drivers, for example, my name is so-and-so. I'm sorry that I nearly knocked over X, Y, and Z and endangered the lives of passengers. I will never do it again. Needless to say, that individual will still need a suspension of some kind. But I still feel getting people, not you can force them, but getting them to have that as an option to come back to the public to apologize, I think it goes a long way. And you'll be amazed to see how gentle they are. And so hopefully those young men would have learned their lesson. And again, kudos to the individuals who got together and made the decision to let them clean up the beach, and also to apologize to the public over the next couple of days to get the cleaning done. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. What about you?
I'm fine. Only thing, I was there a little long, but I got a lot of patience and tolerance.
All right.
I'm at St. Squalling. What the young people did with those coconut shells, I think it was wrong. And seeing that they fixed the matter, right, they should give them a break, and that would teach them a lesson. I believe that there should be some way that they can take the coconut shells and shred them and stuff like that, right? Because they can convert into money too, right? So they got to work on that as well, right? So let bygones be bygones. They do the community work, and that will teach them a lesson. My main concern, right? Well, my main concerns this afternoon is about a consumer should not rush after sales items, right? Because the thing about here is, especially perishable fruits and vegetables, I had two bad experiences. I know there was COVID and stuff, right? You imagine a person could pack, right, oranges in a bag that ain't got no holes that the oranges could breathe, right? And you buy these oranges and you take them home to realize that you got half of the oranges are rotten. And the thing about it is, the price of these four oranges is $6.86 from a supermarket. First time I bought strawberries, all the strawberries were bad to the bottom and the ones to the top were good and it was sealed. And I take that there laying down, right? Mm-hmm. I said, all right, you see me? This time I can call and I can let them know. But I want consumers, when they're going to buy these sales things, right, to make sure they check them or don't buy them at all. Let them take them and dump them. those things ain't fair to the consumer. You think I should be paying $6.86 for four little peony oranges, huh? And then at the back of it, they're no good.
I can identify with what you're saying, and actually, no, listening to you, instead of taking home the fruit, I mean, you can't really afford strawberries, at least I can't on a regular, but when you do, you're able to buy some for my daughter. By the time you get home and you open them up, the ones at the top, and then in the middle, all this fungus, and you know, we should then open them up right there, because I have them taped down. And I'm thinking I should open them up and ask, not to touch them up, but to ask the back, the vegetable people and the fruit people to kindly just open this up so I can check this, please. Because people are taking home a lot of bad fruit and they're hidden in between the good fruit. And I don't know if they're doing it. I would hate to think they're doing it deliberately. You can buy some tomatoes or buy something and the bad part is facing down. And by the time you get home, you see what you see. Somebody must know at some point. I'm hoping that they don't, but it's happening so regular that you're wondering.
Yeah, because if they had them in the COVID time and trying to get rid of them, if the packers realize that it tastes bad and the supervisor tells them to pack them, they should know within themselves that these things are not good and don't put them there. Take them back to the people who to buy them from, you understand, let the planters know what the situation is. Maybe know that they're perishable, but don't charge high prices and then put the rotten things in between. The English potato does do the same foolishness way.
Yes.
Put all the bad potatoes in the center and sell you these things. And then the cost of transportation to carry back, the plate don't worth the candle, you know, to take them back and stuff like that. So you have to take the losses and stuff like that. And money has to come by. People are unemployed.
As for English potatoes, the smell of bad English potatoes in between. Ugh.
But sometimes you don't smell it. Sometimes you don't smell it. When you go down to take out the potatoes, you see two and three and they're so half rotten and all sorts of foolishness. And certain supermarkets don't take back anything. You understand? And some of these supermarkets that you go in and buy certain things, you met like Bonnie Clover, and when you go back to the cashier, I can't do nothing about that, so you got to carry back to the manufacturers. And I am taking money to go up to Point Hill to exchange nothing and then turn around there and buy them Bonnie Clover. I am doing it.
So what if it actually be interesting to find out, and I would do that next time I go to the supermarket, when I'm taking up fruit, in particular, like even grapes, sometimes the bad ones in between, but particular, I must say, strawberries take the cake for sure. That's on top of the list where you would always find these bad strawberries, and you just bought them. So maybe we should ask a question when we're shopping for fruit that we can't see all of them. Ask the back, could you kindly open this up? They have their gloves on. And let me inspect these this fruit before I purchase all of them. And I think we might be within our right to do that. But I would ask a question when I go to the supermarket. I certainly will.
But I am buying nothing that type in our bag. And I can't see because it is not right. And if you send somebody to buy something for you, and then next thing you know, you got bad things, how you going to feel? Oh, you barely got money to buy certain things, and then they're no news to you. You know, but they need to do something about that, right?
But do you call
black people?
Sorry, do you call the supermarket?
Like, of course,
right? No,
call.
But no, not right. Right as soon as you get home, say.
No. Apparently, somebody brought them for me. You understand? I said, well, these things are very expensive. So then, when I do so, and I take out one of the oranges that were good, the next one was okay. Mm-hmm. And then the other two was bad. It's just $6.86 for these things. And these things, bad. And they don't worth no $6.86. This price is cold, Jane. You understand?
I still can't get over the carrots at $6. And the carrots were like the size of my little finger, two of them. And the other one was the size of like a Snicker bar. And it was $6 and change. And that was given to me too, by the way. So I didn't buy them. Someone sent them for me. When I looked at the price, I was like, no way. And this was in April. During the shutdown.
And they need to do something about these things. And these things ain't good. And this is black people that working for white people. You understand? And that is saying, the man said, when you get a man a black man a bunch of kids, you understand? He's puffed off his chest and get home like an idiot, you understand?
But I asked him a question, and I'm going to ask you, what do you think that that's why that's the norm? Why do you think that when you give them, according to you, the keys, all of a sudden the chest up in the air, they don't know you?
Because the white man know that when they give them the keys, you understand, they can treat the black brothers like slaves. Cause them ain't gonna do it, so they left them to do it to their own. You understand? And then they can criticize the white people. The white people don't do nothing, you know. Them is who do themselves. You understand? Cause sometimes they need to sit down and think about the foolishness that they do to one another, their own color that they just do. You know what I mean? And these things are not good. Or in relation to the hospital and the eye ward, the eye clinic, right? Sometimes these people just got to wait 6 months to get an eye appointment. And then, for some reason or other, another doctor don't turn up, and another doctor has got to do all the work, and the other doctor can't do all the work themselves. So then people just got to go on, get another appointment and stuff. And you got 1 o'clock appointment, and then, next thing you know, when trap astray, they're telling the patients, oh, you got to make a fresh appointment. I went to the hospital with a friend of mine, and let me tell you something, 3:30, you can hear you're going to make another appointment. By the time you get an appointment, that's another story. So he said, "Say me, come on, go in Point Road and get your business sorted out, pay the little money, and get your little drugs, and come and go home." Right? Another friend of mine can't see you tall, and then can't get the appointment. And they tell him the best thing to do is try and go across Point Road and see if you can get the operation here. And they charge you for $4,000, and you have to scrape up the money.
But do you know that private as well? Last week, I got a call from a lady. She didn't want to speak on the air, but I'm free to say what I have to say now because she gave me permission to do so without calling her name. But she has retina detachment, I think it is. And that happens when they wait too late, and when it's fully detached, then she's blind and there's nothing they can do anymore. So she called me to say, when we talked about QEH, I think last week someone spoke about not getting a surgery and so on and so forth. She said it also, these things also happen in private, because that happened to her in a private setting. And right now she's young. She's not 65 or just turned 65. And that's it. So we spoke, and she's a lovely lady. We spoke for a while. And she's adjusting, and if she's listening, I want to say good afternoon to you. And she's working with talking to Carrie Ann Eiffel, and the persons the Council of the Disabled. She's obviously knowing this is what it is. She's grown to accept. It's hard because obviously when that happens, and it happens later in life, and you could have avoided it, or it could have been avoided rather. You really feel awful about it, but she's on her way to recovering mentally. There are a lot of situations at the QEH. That is why I was saying that someone needs to, right now, as you're listening to this program, sit down and think about it. If something happens to you, who is the person that would be there for you that may not be family? There's some people who have family members and they're not close. And someone at the QH can correct me, because another person is here saying that they will not recognize any other person other than family when you call. But my question is, will they recognize the individual that you listed on that patient information? Who is your next of kin? Who is the person that we can call? Because if you put down, and you got to update information too, because a man could put down his wife, he's divorced or they're going through a divorce, he gets sick and he has a new girlfriend. The wife ain't interested, but her name down, you know, as a recognized person. So this is a conversation that I feel families should start having, because like I said, at some point we all get ill, and or we visit someone at the hospital and we want to know what's happening with our loved one. And then you hear, well, if you're not so-and-so, you can't get the information, which is fair. You don't want to give out information to strangers. There's patient-doctor confidentiality. But there must be something that you can sign to say, for example, for me, you know, it could be my daughter, I mean, my mom is still alive, but let's say that you have your mother as your next of kin, but your mother may not be mentally and physically able to speak to the doctors. So it's something that I don't think people think about it, but I think it's something to think about, because it can make the difference between saving your life and dying, not getting the right information, not asking the right questions to the right people at the hospital. And I think
person got the operation, they could actually see it was just a matter of getting the finance to get the thing done, because it didn't make any sense waiting anymore for another 6 months appointment, or not, the person would have probably gone blind. You know, so I tend to think they're supposed to do something in that clinic in relation to prioritizing who should get operations and that sort of thing. Because then, eventually, people walking about the world with sticks and stuff like that and blowing. These things ain't good. You know what I mean? And the taxpayers putting a lot of money in that place, you know. And then people pay national insurance and all of that type of thing, and the NAD there, you know, things ain't going so good. Some people getting through, and some people ain't getting through. I know
that. That's the thing. So let's see how we can make sure that everybody has access to the same level of treatment, in particular when it comes to healthcare. Because, truth be told, when you have money, there's a saying that the rich will live and the poor can die. And because rich people can pay for a private care and private nurse and private so on and so forth, how can we change that? How can we have our state-owned hospital treating patients in the same way? But that doesn't happen until we get more resources for them and better plans for our local hospital. There are some changes that they have to make, and I know that they've started. But we still have a long way to go. But I want to thank you so much for your contribution.